institution, including a right to life. So that's the entire person, a personhood, a purpose, a personhood Alabama, mm-hmm. and personhood USA. I got involved because, surprise, surprise, people, I failed the bar. So a few days after doing that, and I've retaken it, but anyway, a few days after failing.
Oh, I feel pretty good about this time. I think you're going to get it this time.
You did last time, too. So, but
I was only wrong by 2 points.
That's true. I failed by two, guys. But
it's not like you, I mean, just bombed it.
I mean, it felt like a bombing. But then again, yeah. Everything does. But no, so I actually got a call from one of the attorneys that is associated with this case. And he was like, well, when you're done, he was like, when you finally get over yourself and stop, you know, mourning over this, then when you're ready to do something about it, you know, come on, come talk to me. So I did. And he was like, look, I got a great case. You want to be involved with this? I'm like, okay, this thing's fantastic. So here we are. I'm not an attorney. I'm not an attorney on the case. I am very well connected with the attorneys on the case, and I get to sometimes input with it. But for the most part, I just get to talk to people about how awesome this case is, which is frankly my other favorite thing to do.
Well, now, granted, long before you met me, you were already a pretty good talker. But I would like to think that your time on Tactics as a co-host helped with that at least a little bit.
Well, I think as a female, I just have a hard time shutting up. So I definitely honed in those skills working at, you know, being your co-host. And
as somebody that talks more than you, I don't know what that says about me.
We'll discuss that at your therapy session.
Okay, okay. All right. So I do, you know, wonder about this, too, because the thing that really spurred on this national media outcry, I guess is the best way to put it, is that there is a case that is going on right now, and it really didn't get a lot of national acclaim. We were talking about it on News Radio 1440 before this happened, but the thing that really propelled it to the heights that it's now and has a lot of, frankly, pro-choice advocates really worried is that an Alabama judge, I believe in Madison County,
yeah,
has actually essentially declared already, just by giving standing to this case, that the unborn child is a person. And so if you could talk about how that came about and exactly what that means for the case going forward.
Yeah, and you're right. You have been talking about this for a while. We came on the show talking about this back in October, November, something like that.
Yeah, that was you and Sam McClure, wasn't it?
Me and Sam McClure, back when this case was in its very dream stages. So what we did is we filed for wrongful death. And basically, it's a tort, and it's saying, hey, I died, and you caused it, so that's not cool, guys. For anybody to go forward with such a claim, you first have to file in a probate court and ask for letters of administration. And basically, that's just a recognition of the estate and the fact that this person was alive and giving the right to sue. So, interestingly enough, it has been done in Alabama before. A unborn child has sued for wrongful death. The interesting thing, though, is that nobody has done it for an unborn child that died from abortion. That's us. People under Alabama law, we recognize that unborn babies are people. So that's what makes this case unique and wonderful. It's just that, and really most of the law across the board, Alabama, national, everything, recognizes that.
Right. In fact, I think New York became the first state with the new abortion law that went forward that doesn't recognize that, because they removed any protections for the unborn from the criminal code at all.
Yeah.
So in other words, if a abusive boyfriend, for example, were to punch a woman in the stomach until she miscarried, you could charge him for assault of the woman, but you couldn't charge him for murder of the child. And they were the first state, I believe, to do that.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And the funny thing is that, and Justice Parker pointed this out, every area of the law recognizes an unborn child as a person, except for abortion.
Right.
That's what makes this case huge, is that we said, hey, this aborted child is now suing for wrongful death. And the judge said, okay, we recognize that that's a person. Now, there is some talk that the guy is saying, we didn't know, I didn't know that it was an aborted child. He did. We put it in there. You can see it. It's public record. So
right.
There's that. But that's what's making all this huge, is that's never been done before anywhere. So that it's kind of fun.
Okay. So I was just wondering about this. If you could really walk us through this process, what does this mean going forward? Because there is a good chance, at least in my opinion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, that this is going to be one of those cases that is going to have implementations on the higher levels, regardless of which way it goes. I mean, whether they rule one way or the other way, it's going to wind up getting appealed and going to a higher court, probably. So, you know, what's the ripple effect of this case? Do you think it makes it to the Alabama Supreme Court? Does it make it to the U.S. Supreme Court? If it does, what does that mean?
I mean, our goal is to make it all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And here's the thing. We were ready to appeal even the probate judge's decision if he denied us. So we were ready to take it all the way up. We think that, yes, no matter what happens at the trial level, which is where we are right now, we think it will be appealed either by us or by them. And I think this will eventually go all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. Because we wrote the pleadings the way that we did, we have it to where they would essentially have to recognize personhood. We're doing it under a theory of personhood. So at some point, the court's going to have to either say, no, a fetus is not a person, or yes, a fetus is a person. And that's a question that's never been presented.
Well, see, and that's important because that seems common sense to you and me. And it's really been what the entire abortion debate has been about since Roe v. Wade, which I think most people would agree with that statement as well. But the reason that that hasn't come up is because courts, typically speaking, like to sort of defend things or defend their statements on very broad grounds and not get specific. And so what you're saying is your case has been essentially backed the court into a corner to where they have to rule one way or the other. There is no way to do a middle ground or a narrow decision, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah, absolutely. They've punted on this question before, and we're saying you can't punt. And the other genius thing about this, I cannot even begin to tell you how proud I am of this legal team. It's a phenomenal team, and this is the genius of what they've done, is they've said, Supreme Court, you can't punt anymore, and on top of that, you have to answer it because it's a state question. So you have to look under our laws as well, and Alabama law is pretty clear. I mean, this is uniquely set up. It's beautiful. I can't even begin to tell you how proud I am of this team.
Just out of curiosity, is Amendment 2 playing into that at all, the amendment about personhood that just passed this past election?
Yeah, I think it'll play a huge part in it. Okay. We didn't intend it because at the time it was still.
I was about to say, but that was before the election when you guys started this process. So obviously you didn't know if that was going to happen. But it's, if it does help, I mean, I hope that it does in some way.
I mean, it's a perfect setup. It's almost as if it's a football ready to be kicked into the field goal. I hope the Alabama fans aren't there a little bit. Offended.
I hope it's not an Alabama fan doing the kicking.
No, we're all Auburn fans, so this is good.
That's right. But what would you say, and I know that you may not be able to comment on this, I really have no idea. Take out the what you want to do and what you want to happen, because obviously you and I both being very, very pro-life, we want it to go to the Supreme Court and establish that the unborn person is a person nationwide. That's the desired goal. Where do you think it's going to end up? If you had to predict right now, where do you think it's going to end up and what will that court decide, do you think?
Well, using my legal knowledge here, most likely result would be that trial court, I feel like we will likely lose that. It will be appealed to the Alabama Courts of Appeal and all the way up to the Alabama Supreme Court. I think because of the makeup, it is likely we will win there. I think
Chief Justice Parker especially is a very well-known pro-life advocate.
Oh, he's ready for it. He is. I think he has basically declared in his opinions that he wants the ball. He just was waiting for somebody to pass it to him.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. I think after that, it will likely be appealed up to the Supreme Court by the pro-aborts. And then from there, you know, something like 1,000 or more cases get appealed at the Supreme Court. They don't take every one of them. Sometimes it's like the persistent widow. If enough of it comes up, eventually they just take one.
Right.
Sometimes they still ignore it. So it could be that they ignore it and they kick it back to the Alabama courts, in which case, if I'm right and we win in the Alabama Supreme Court, hey, victory for us. But does not have a national implication.
Right.
If they take it, could have a national implication. So either way, it's the Supreme Court speaking, you know, whether they take it or not. That's what's going to be really interesting.
Right. In the Supreme Court's case, not to speak is to speak.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Every time. So it really, this could go so many different ways. You know, we're both INTJs. We see a chessboard right in front of us. So you and I are both looking at this like, you know, if you make this move or this move, this will go this way and then it'll end like this. That's how I'm looking at it. If I'm looking at a most likely prediction, that's what it would be.
Well, the only thing that I'm really concerned about here is that if, let's say, theoretically, this does make it to the Supreme Court, I really have no doubts in my mind whatsoever about Justice Alito and Justice Thomas. To me, the big question mark is Gorsuch. I'm pretty confident on, even though we've not seen a lot from him when it comes to the issue of life. Kavanaugh and Roberts, though, I mean, they're essentially dark horses at this point. I have no idea which way they would go on this one.
I don't either. I think if we can make the question clear-cut enough just to say, you know, I know some people will disagree with me on this, but this is my opinion. I'm not speaking for the group
right
for this, but
this is just Laura Gladwell.
This is Laura Gladwell, and you could, you know, pay me for my opinion when I become an attorney. But I think if we present it as a question of, is it a person rather than overturn Roe versus Wade, we have a higher chance of success with Kavanaugh because he has indicated this whole, I guess, respect for precedent.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm looking at him and I'm saying, I'm not asking you to overturn Roe versus Wade, I'm asking you to answer the question you punted on.
Right.
He's more likely to make a ruling in our favor because this is a straightforward question. It's never been answered before. If you go up there and say, I just want you to overturn Roe versus Wade, Kavanaugh is going to be a question because I think that was a major issue in his appointment. And I think he's going to be very sensitive to wanting to overturn Roe versus Wade. Roberts, it just depends on what side of the bed he wakes up on.
Yeah, that unfortunately, that's the way it seems to be. And with Kennedy, like the thing about Kennedy is he was kind of like that beforehand. But now that Kennedy is no longer in the picture, I almost feel like Roberts, and this is based on some of the things that I've heard from people that know Roberts, Roberts almost wants to become the new Kennedy. And I think that could be really problematic, especially for this case. But one thing that I did want to point out that you brought up is that the case Roe v. Wade, the prevailing opinion essentially said that if they ever establish personhood of the unborn, then the whole thing falls apart. And so,
well, the footnote, yeah.
Right. So they essentially left a roadmap to overturn Roe v. Wade anyway. But one thing that I wanted to ask you about is there has been, maybe this is just my perception, but I don't think so. And I want to see if you've noticed it too. I have seen a shift in perspective on this issue in the past couple months.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think the New York law had something to do with it. I'm not sure if it was the only thing, but I am seeing Christians that aren't necessarily all that political, that don't really keep up with the news very much, not just talk about abortion and how wrong it is, but being really passionate and coming out. And I think that the country has shifted on how they see this issue, that the Democrats have actually made a huge error in going far to the left. And I mean, and in some cases, even endorsing infanticide, which isn't even technically abortion. The child's already born at that point. But I think seeing that has caused some of the people that were sort of asleep to awake on this. And I wanted to get your take on that. Have you seen kind of a similar sentiment going on?
I mean, my Facebook feed is filled with abortion. And I got to tell you, I'm thrilled. Because I love that people are waking up to this issue. Mm-hmm. I love that, not that I'm thrilled that it's happening or that New York chose to make this law or any of that. I'm not thrilled with that. But
obviously,
I love the attention that abortion is now getting. It's finally getting what it deserves because this is horrible. It was horrible before we ever started talking about infanticide. I mean, you're talking about, what, 6 weeks old, 8 weeks old? In my mind, that's just as bad. The only difference now is that people who were on the fence about it all agree that once the child's born, it has rights. And, you know, I think that really has woken people up, and I love it. Every minute of it.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that there's a lot of misconception and, frankly, a lot of hope out there for the pro-life movement because our generation is the most pro-life generation that has come since Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of people, you know, don't get me wrong, millennials have problems. We're not a perfect generation by any stretch of the imagination, but we're moving in the right direction on this one.
Don't get me started on Bible verses. I'm pretty background. Oh my goodness, millennials, what are you doing?
Anyway, I mean, like I said, we're not a perfect generation, but we're right on this. And another thing, too, that I've noticed in this generation, and I've just noticed sort of in general, is that the Democrats are wildly out of step on this issue, because a lot of people, including just yesterday, Beto O'Rourke asked a question about third trimester abortions, and he said, yeah, that should be left up to the woman. But that's a position that literally only 13% of Americans hold. The entirety of the rest of the American people, even the ones that are pro-choice, say, well, it should be limited to the first or second trimester. And so I really do think that the Democrats are moving to the left, much to their detriment on this issue. Not saying that that means they're going to lose on the other issues, but I do think that there has been a real change in America's perspective on this.
I do. I think people are finally getting away from this. I think the Democrats did not do themselves a favor. They've gone too far left. No one can handle it. It really is. It's become a problem for them. I would like to point out the irony of talking about women's choice, because for me, it takes me something like 10 minutes just to choose an outfit in the morning, much less choose whether my child lives or dies. So there's that. But I really think they've just shot themselves in the foot, which is actually a little bit fun to watch.
Well, I certainly hope that everything works out and that, you know, this case winds up. I would love, personally, for my state to be the state that winds up bringing the case and eventually overturns Roe v. Wade. So, you know, best of luck, Laura. Is there anything that our listeners could do to help you out? Is there a place that they could either donate or maybe help with their time, show their support? How would they go about doing that?
Yeah. Okay. So if you go to personhoodal.com, you can donate. And this is why that matters, because our attorneys are working for free. This is not their full-time job. This is not their part-time job. This is whenever they can get to it kind of job. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. This is not even my full-time job, and this is hard. So,
but I mean, attorneys are never busy or anything.
No,
right?
No, we don't have like 20 million things sitting on our desk. That's a problem. If we could get enough funds to hire at least one of these attorneys full-time, it would sincerely help this case and the other cases we have going on, because we do have other pro-life things going on too right now. If you want to send support to Ryan Majors, he's the father in this case, you know, let me know. I will absolutely pass that on. My name is Laura Glidewell, as you all know. Find me on Facebook, send me a message, and you can, you know, I'll pass that on. Because he does, he gets discouraged too. He's getting hate messages like all the time. One of the most vocal attorneys, Brent Helms, we were just talking about him getting a security system. It's getting a little violent. So yeah, those are great ways you can support and help. I need help organizing meetings. I need help getting the word out. I need help with quite a lot of things. If you're interested in doing pro-life work and you want to intern for us and you're, you know, young and have nothing better to do with your life, call me.
So whether it's donations in the form of an actual monetary donation or just time and volunteer work, there are positions available.
There is a lot. There is a lot of work to be done, and I would appreciate any and all help, as would we all on the team.
Well, Laura, I got to tell you, I think that history is not going to remember kindly the people that were in favor of abortion and in favor of this. I mean, just killing these innocent children. And I would love to one day be able to say to the next generation, I was one of the ones that stood up and took up this fight.
I agree. I think this will be the next, I don't know. I mean, it'll be up there with the Holocaust, I think.
I think it's actually worse than the Holocaust. Several more people have died in it than ever did in the Holocaust, as horrible as it was.
Oh, I agree. Completely agree.
Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate you being with us. Laura Glidewell, again, is there anything that you want to give, like contact information or anything else you want to give before we go?
Yeah, my email is laura.glidewell1993@gmail.com. Glidewell is spelled as it sounds, like glide like the plane and well like how you cook a steak if you don't know how to eat steak.
And hey now.
You know this is how it is.
I know.
Rare is the way to go.
She eats her steaks rarer than me.
Yeah. You'll find it. So it's good, though. It's the cow. But anyway. If you want to email me, let me know if you want to help, any of that. I will not give you my phone number unless I know that I'm safe to trust you with that. So, yeah. That's how you can contact me, or Facebook.
All right, Laura, thank you so much for being with us. And as always, it's a pleasure to have you in studio. All right, we're going to go to a break here real quick. We'll be back. We have a new comedy sketch for you called The Social Justice Warrior Bible. Hope you enjoy it.
And now for a reading from The Social Justice Warrior Bible with Pastor Gregory Post.
Welcome in. I'm Gregory Post, head pastor at the Eternal Living Word Transdenominational Community Church and Coffee House in Novato, California. Now it's time for a reading from the SJW Bible. Today's reading will come from Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting the fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And the fire came out of the presence of the Lord, which created a wicked cool light show for them to see and totally got everyone feeling the Spirit's presence. Then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying, 'Even though I didn't command you to use this strange fire, I totally understand your need to express yourselves in worship and keep yourselves entertained.' So Aaron therefore danced and yelled with joy, knowing that his sons were having a good time at worship. Moses called out to Mishael and Ezaphan, and the son of Aaron's uncle Uzziel, and said to them, 'Come forward, carry your relatives away in front of the sanctuary outside of the camp, for they have fainted from being overwhelmed by the power of God's coolness.' So they came forward and carried them still in their tunics outside the camp, as Moses had said. Then Moses said to Aaron and his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, 'Do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, because God wants us to always be happy, and as long as we're happy, he's happy. Therefore, if worship doesn't give you an overwhelming sense of euphoria, you need to find another congregation, preferably one with a more dynamic pastor and band.'"
And now for a reading from the Social Justice Warrior Bible with Pastor Gregory Post.
Welcome in. I'm Gregory Post, head pastor at the Eternal Living Word Transdenominational Community Church and Coffee House in Novato, California. Now it's time for a reading from the SJW Bible. Today's reading will come from Leviticus chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting the fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And the fire came out of the presence of the Lord, which created a wicked cool light show for them to see and totally got everyone feeling the Spirit's presence. Then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying, 'Even though I didn't command you to use this strange fire, I totally understand your need to express yourselves in worship and keep yourselves entertained.' So Aaron therefore danced and yelled with joy, knowing that his sons were having a good time at worship. Moses called out to Mishael and Ezaphan, and the son of Aaron's uncle Uzziel, and said to them, 'Come forward, carry your relatives away in front of the sanctuary outside of the camp, for they have fainted from being overwhelmed by the power of God's coolness.' So they came forward and carried them still in their tunics outside the camp, as Moses had said. Then Moses said to Aaron and his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, 'Do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, because God wants us to always be happy, and as long as we're happy, he's happy. Therefore, if worship doesn't give you an overwhelming sense of euphoria, you need to find another congregation, preferably one with a more dynamic pastor and band.' So they did according to the word of Moses. And the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, 'Do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you, when you come into the sanctuary, so that you will be able to drink more once you arrive. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, between the unclean and the clean. Because when worship stops being fun or feels judgy, then it becomes profane and unclean.'" Wow, so inspiring. This has been a reading from the SJW Bible. And remember, the only truth that matters is your truth.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back into Tactics on News Radio 1440 from the News Radio 1440 studio. Don't forget, you can also call in 334-860-1440. Those are the numbers. And speaking of the phones, it looks like we have somebody on the line right now. So we're going to go to John from Millbrook. Good afternoon. Sorry.
That's fine. That's a habit, isn't it?
I was about to say, I get used to answering the phones in the morning, so I've been saying good morning ever since I've been on radio. It's weird being on at night like this.
So what's the topic of the day?
Well, actually, we just had our special guest, Laura Gladwell, on to talk to us about the case that's going on with abortion.
Well, I know that's a topic that's resonating.
I tell you what, I'll ask you the same question that I just asked her. It was the last question in the interview. I have been noticing, and I don't know if this is your experience or not, but I am noticing a real shift in the way that America views this issue because, let's be honest, it's gone back and forth a little bit, but it's been mostly the same argument ever since Roe v. Wade happened. And now what I'm seeing is people that aren't necessarily all that political, that are kind of neophytes, as it were, to the political debate and don't really pay a lot of attention to the news, there are Christians that have gotten really enthusiastic and passionate about this issue. And so I was wondering, have you seen kind of a similar thing with that? I know you run into a lot of Christians in your life.
Sure, I do with that, but that's been the case throughout the time. I still say the biggest thing is among secular people that aren't as, they may say they believe in God, but they're not affiliated with any church or anything, but I still think when an individual sees their ultrasound, they see themselves, and then they see themselves now at 15, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, along those ages, and then how can they justify killing themselves? You see what I'm saying?
No, I agree.
Mentally, I mean, how in the world could you do that and say, you know, well, what if mom had gotten rid of me?
Right. I think there's a level of self-reflection there that didn't exist before we could sort of see inside the womb and see yourself. And even back in my day, the tech was good, but I still just kind of look like a shadowy blob in my first pictures. You look at the pictures they've got now, and I mean, it's like you went inside there with a Coleman lantern and just, you know, had a light on it and could see everything inside. I mean, it's amazing how good the tech has gotten. I think that does have an effect on people.
Of course it does. And if you value life, it's the only argument. When you are defending that, and you're trying to make the argument in favor of it, and all you've got in your corner is it's a woman's body, and the woman has charge over her body, well, all of us have charge over our body. I mean, you can't shoot people, and you can't beat people, and you can't. There are ramifications, or there's parameters around that, and what people are seeing is, it's normalcy now for them to see their ultrasound and to recognize that life exists inside the womb and I can see it myself. And that has to have an impact on people. I need young people that were in my classes that were pro-life, that were as liberal as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different aspect of this that just hasn't happened before. And it's hard to hold on to that. Well, on one side, you're defending babies and life, and on the other side, you're defending what you're calling a choice. And that's just hard to defend, isn't it?
It is, and another thing, too, because choice is usually the very thin veil that they sort of throw over this argument. Part of the reason that doesn't really hold water all that well, and I've had discussions with people that happen to be pro-choice on this issue as well, and one of the things that I'll talk with them about is I'll say, okay, well, your assertion is that the baby is not the woman, or is a part of the woman's body. Can you prove to me that your body and my body are not the same thing in such a way that it also would allow for a woman and her body, her child to be the same? And they never can do it because here's the thing, at a very early stage in development, as soon as conception happens, it has a completely unique genetic signature. Very early in development, it has its own nervous system, it has its own circulatory system, it has its own blood type that is not the same as the mother's. And so from a purely biological standpoint, it is very tricky business to try to define individuality in such a way that you can attribute it to a grown person sitting next to another grown person, that you can attribute it to them when you're talking about a woman and the child that is growing in her womb. I mean, it can't be done from a scientific level. And
it can't be done from a compassion level either, or
that's
consideration
also
of on the feeling side, which is how the other argument is done. It's almost like you're infringing upon their right as a human being to be able to do this, and that's a God-given right of believing in God to be able to do that. And we have too many people that have had harrowing experiences, like we've talked about before,
sure,
that have had abortions, and it still comes up in their mind, and they're still having to deal with it, just like someone has to deal with sexual molestation by someone when they were younger, or other tragedies that happen. That's the same kind of psychological issue that you're trying to deal with there, and they never measure the pain or take into account those kinds of things. And there are a lot of books out there on it, and people that are testifying about it. That's a hard case to overcome.
Well, that's the thing. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you don't care about the baby at all, that you don't think that it's a human, that you don't think there's anything morally wrong with ending that pregnancy. There's still no way to deny the fact that it hurts the women. And that a lot of the women that are involved in this, they have post-traumatic stress disorder, which is something you just alluded to. There are women that have a hard time with physical intimacy, with emotional intimacy with a partner, because that's something that continues to haunt them. You know, there are a lot of symptoms, and of course it doesn't happen to every person that's had an abortion, but there are a lot of symptoms and side effects that come from having a major medical procedure like this that really doesn't get discussed in the media because it doesn't fit that narrative.
So, that's true.
Thank you so much for
your
call.
Someone get them. Sure. Take care.
You have a good one. And again, I almost said have a good morning, because I'm so used to doing radio in the morning. That just seems to be the way it is. But hopefully it's a habit that I'll be able to overcome. And I tell you what, I actually did have a couple other things planned for today, but I think I'm going to have to forego them because we are quickly running out of time. And I have promised somebody that I have another engagement. So unfortunately, we're going to have to go ahead and skip right to the end of the show. Don't worry. Anything that I left off, we'll try to get to later. And don't forget that if you ever do want more of my political commentary, the best way to do that is to follow me on Facebook, the Tactics Facebook page, facebook.com/Tactics Radio, News Radio 1440, which the show's being aired on right now. And you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. And if you do that, you're going to get all the latest news, latest videos on things that we're doing. And actually, the appointment that I have with somebody is to meet with a couple of people that I have tonight that are going to be helping me with some informational videos on things like the Bible, on subjects of evolution, apologetics, and law, constitution, and the history of this great country. So there's a lot of different things, got a lot of irons in the fire right now, and we're hoping to bring you some new content when it comes to that. You'll get the latest news on that only at Tactics Radio on Twitter or on the Tactics Radio Facebook page, so be sure to check that out. All right, so we're going to go ahead and go to the chaplain's report. And this is going to be an odd introduction, but I'm going to do the best that I can to describe myself. If you've ever read the Screwtape Letters, by C.S. Lewis, they're Christian fiction, and it takes a look, and Lewis fully admits that this is just his opinion. Like, it's Christian fiction, which means that Lewis took several, I guess, literary freedoms with the Bible, and he doesn't necessarily portray it as though this is the way that it actually happens. This is just kind of the way that Lewis imagines temptation happening in his own mind. And several parts of it are based on biblical ideas and biblical thought. But a lot of it is just his own opinion. But it's an opinion that I think makes a lot of sense, and it's internally plausible. And I think that he's probably not too far off the mark in the way that demons tempt human beings. And I do believe, because the Bible says that is something that takes place. I don't think that it happens in the very direct way, for example, demon possession like that happened in the first century. But I do think that demons are still very much a real part of human life, and that they really do try to tempt you away from God. And part of the reason that I'm saying all this in my introduction right here is because I do think that some of these experiences that are had by people, that they don't realize that that's what's going on. I'm not saying that demons make people do anything, and Lewis doesn't suggest that either. I think that when that takes place, sort of like a friend that has a bad influence on you or something like that, that the demon kind of offers suggestions, but they don't really make you do anything. And that's the way that Lewis portrays it. I think that's a pretty good representation of how it actually happens. And I believe, can't prove it, don't know this for sure, but I believe that's actually something that happened to me recently. In fact, last night I was feeling a temptation very strongly to defy God and act in rebellion against his will. And I wonder, not sure, but I wonder if there was some kind of influence that was going on, that I know that at the very least I was paying attention to the worst parts of my personality as opposed to the best parts and what God expects of me as a Christian and as a disciple of his. And one of the things that I considered and immediately realized how ridiculous it was whether it was me thinking this or this was a thought that was sort of whispered in my ear, as Lewis describes it, by some kind of dark force, that just go ahead because God's never really done anything for you. And immediately after that thought crossed my mind, I started laughing because nothing could be further from the truth. It was so utterly absurd and ridiculous, this idea that God's never really done anything for me, that it immediately snapped me out of that mode of temptation. And so if that was a dark influence, then they made a fatal error in bringing that thought to my attention. Because if that is what is going on, then there is nothing more absurd from that. In fact, it would be more correct to say that there is nothing that God has not done for me. And I take you to one of my favorite chapters in the scripture, in Romans 8, 31 through 33, where the Roman writer Paul writes, "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him over for all of us, how will he not also with him freely give us all things?" And especially the last verse in that reading, in verse 32, where it's saying, "He who did not spare his own son." And I think that's really the takeaway line from that passage. Because the way that Paul is presenting this is he's encouraging his brothers there at Rome and saying, I get it. You guys are facing persecution and it is rough. And I understand that that is not an easy thing to do. And Paul would have been speaking from experience. I mean, very few people have suffered as much as Paul at the hands of others just for him being a Christian. So Paul, he was not doing this out of apathy or saying, look, I know it's hard, I've not really been there. No, no. Paul knew what persecution felt like. And he understood, and understood well, that that is exactly what was going on here at Rome. But what he's saying here is, guys, I get it, but if you're on the Lord's side, who's really going to stand against you? Seriously, that's the question that he's posing. Because if God is on your side and he was willing to give his own son to protect you from sin, do you really think he is going to take a step back or maybe just kind of halfway do something to protect you now? Do you really think that God was going to give that ultimate sacrifice? And then when you do start facing temptation, or you do face something that is causing a problem in your spiritual life, that God is just going to sort of sit back and let you handle it on your own? Of course not. That's silly. And so, kind of similar to what I was going through last night, and I realize that's nowhere near what the persecution that the early Christians at Rome were going through. I'm not saying that it is. But when you're reminded of the fact that he was willing to give his own son, that there was nothing that God was not willing to do to rescue you from your own sin, it is a very sobering thought that makes you think, yeah, if God was willing to do that, I probably shouldn't have to worry too much about anything that's going to come up against me. Because if he was willing to do that, then he's going to be willing to do pretty much anything else that I need to be able to get to heaven. Now, granted, a lot of that responsibility is on you as well, because God's already offered the gift. It's still your responsibility to take advantage of it. But what I am saying here is that whether it's a temptation or it's something that's going on in your life that's not ideal, like with the persecutions in Rome, or you just don't have everything that you think you ought to have, or you're in a really rough situation, you're going through a sickness, or you're dealing with a family member that is, or something like that, whatever it is, God spares no expense when it comes to helping his children. Because when we were lost in our sins, and the only possible way to rescue us was to give up his only begotten son, God still said, fine, I'll pay it. And if he was willing to do that, we really shouldn't have to worry about any other kind of obstacle coming up against us, because that was the biggest obstacle of all, the obstacle that would require the most from God to do, and he did it. Which means whatever we're going on in our, whatever is going on in our life that's causing us problems right now, God's able to overcome that. And he's going to help us overcome it, because he's already helped us overcome the greatest obstacle of our spiritual lives. And in my case especially, that's very true, because I'm sure God has saved all of us in a physical way. In other words, spared our physical lives probably countless times, and we just didn't know it. But in my case, he did so in a very obvious way because of the struggle that I went through with cancer, and much faster than any of my doctors honestly could explain, I was able to overcome that and overcome it with very little side effects. And so, especially for somebody like me, the idea that God's never really done anything for me is just so patently absurd. Laughter was the only correct response. Because no matter what we're going through in life, God has already done everything for us. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics is a production of News Radio 1440 and Cumulus Media Montgomery. Any opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Cumulus Media. The theme song for Tactics is 6 Foot Town by Big and Rich. Graphics by Jessica Dawson. Broadcast studios provided by Cumulus Media Montgomery. Location studios provided by the Dalreda Church of Christ. Copyright 2019.